So, yeah, so I think we should start now so that we are able to finish in time and that you can make it to your hotel or whatever you are planning today and for your evening. Yeah, welcome, ladies. No ladies, no lady in there. Oh, there's one. Okay. Lady and gentlemen, to my session on Azure Park usage metering. Question at first, how many of you have already deployed Azure Park in your environment? Nobody? Okay, some of you. So how many of you are playing or testing with it in the lab environment? Okay. And how many of you are still using the System Center, let's say old stuff, so the System Center tools themselves, so Service Manager, Orchestrator, etc. Okay, so I think you might have already noticed that Azure Park is the future of System Center. Okay, some words for me. I'm working within Microsoft consultant Microsoft Solutions consultancy for more than 15 years now, and I started my System Center journey with Microsoft Operation Manager 2000, some years ago. And after doing that, I moved to Service Manager, later on Orchestrator, and the last 2 years I've been working with Windows Azure Pack, nearly 100%. I'm working for Bytes at Work, a company that's placed in Germany, in Dortmund, and we are 25 people that are able to do the whole systems, the whole Windows Azure Pack stack, starting from the storage technology, going to the Azure Pack itself, and we are have developers that are creating a custom portal that sits above the Azure Pack technology, because for a customer, our most important customer, it's a Wortmann company. Perhaps somebody of you who's coming from Germany knows Wortmann Terra hardware. And some years ago, they decided to go to software, create their own hosting, hoster or data center technology, and it's completely based on Microsoft technology. That's why we are doing web. Yeah, in addition, I founded the Building Clouds Community of Germany, also known as Private Cloud User Group. That was the old name. And later on, within the last year, I changed this when Microsoft was going to to Building Clouds blog. I changed the name, and now it's Building Clouds Community. Yeah, I'm specialist, like I already told you, on Azure Pack technologies, and I'm MVP on one of the most long names of expertise System Center Cloud and Data Center Management for the second year now. Yeah, what's the session objective? What I'm going to talk to you about? At first, I would give a one slide overview on Azure Packs, just to make sure that everybody who's in the room knows where I'm talking about. Later on, I'm going to tell you what Windows Azure Pack usage reporting is on, why do you need it, which components and which functionality we are using, the design aspects, configuration, and then I'm going to talk about Cloud Cruiser. Cloud Cruiser is not a part of Azure Pack. It's a third-party vendor, Cloud Cruiser. Perhaps somebody of you know them when they have been working for the billing of System Center Service Manager. They got a tool in the past on that. And later on, I will give some notes on the from the field. So there's been some interesting information when we are talking, when I've been talking to the Microsoft architect in this environment, what you should do, what you shouldn't do with reporting, and basically where are some, let's say it, some bugs that you could run into. And I'm then going to Q&A, and hopefully will end in time. Okay, so as nobody is leaving the room, I think that everybody is right in here now. Let's gonna start. I hope, or I think, that most of you have already seen this slide, or a slide with similar information on that. Just a short overview, Windows Azure Pack, what it's having as features right now, and to make sure that there's an idea why we need usage metering and what's it's like. We have website functionality, so you can provide your own websites through Azure Pack in an automated, automated way. You are able to create and automatically deploy more servers if they are needed in this environment automatically based on Microsoft technologies. It's high scalable, and it's the full self-service functionality within. Then we have a service bus based on reliable messaging, cross-cloud functionality, in addition, full servers for self-servers, and then, in my opinion, the most important thing, the virtual machines. But let's say if you are a hoster, you are interested in deploying virtual machines to your customers as an infrastructure as a service functionality. But in addition, a lot of enterprise customers right now are thinking of this idea too. But because when you think in detail what you're doing when you are providing IT for a company, you're providing virtual machines for the services you're running, you're perhaps providing websites, and perhaps you are deploying your databases. That's one functionality that's in Azure Pack, basically in two. In addition, we have a service management portal that looks like Azure. If you go for the admin portal or the tenant portal, you can federate with it, with Active Directory Federation services. And it's device friendly. So the idea to have an HTML5 portal that's fully customizable, basically, and fully customizable basically because there's some information from Microsoft how you can modify the CSS styles that are basically part of the portal, but it's not really completely modifiable. But if you go deep into the portals, you'll see it works. We found a way to do that, not to just make sure that it's corporate identity and for the vault one, it's purple and not blue. We found a way to disable controls on that, etc. Yeah, if you all do that stuff, you should think about the idea, do we need some accounting or billing? If you're a hoster, you for sure are interested in hosting and billing because it's your daily business. But if you're an enterprise company, it's interesting perhaps too because you have to make sure that your cost centers are paying the IT technology you're providing. So perhaps you need billing there too. So billing and accounting is one of the ideas we are able to do with the service reporting. It's a collector of usage data. So we need to collect how many VMs are running, how many CPUs are online, what's the network traffic, how many storage will be there. Perhaps you're thinking about traffic to the internet, local traffic, backup traffic, whatever, and that's part of that. Another thing that service reporting gives you is it's a provider for data per tenant because it's interesting not only to have your full costs in a report, you need to split that up into the tenants, and that's a way service reporting gives you. You can collect or display your data based on power pivot tables in Excel. So everybody that's perhaps having the knowledge of service manager, perhaps having knowledge of data warehouse, of service manager, and the cubes within there, It's a similar technology the system is relying on. If we go with that, you are fine with service reporting, basically, or you are able to add another third-party add-on, Cloud Cruiser. If you go with the web platform installer to install web, you have the possibility to deploy or to create a server with the Cloud Cruiser software within that sits in a similar way on the web usage data, but provides another way to give you or to deploy reports. You are able to do your billing with Cloud Cruiser, etc. I will later on give an online demo how it looks like, so that you have an idea how it works. That's the idea we're talking about. And the components that are interesting in this structure is the basic system center things. We're going to start with System Center Operation Manager. How many of you know SCOM or System Center Operation Manager? Okay. And I think if you go with Operation Manager and have deployed Hyper-V machines, you know the way to combine VMM and Ops Manager data. Let's think about the pro functionality. So Operation Manager knows, hopefully, the amount of data that's running in a virtual machine, etc., so that you can have a report on that. In addition, service reporting relies on System Center SPF, Service Provider Foundation, that has been introduced with System Center 2012 as a, let's say, translator between VMM and basically or generally orchestrator at first. This Service Provider Foundation functionality is basically one of the most important points in our service reporting database. In addition, we rely on Azure Pack as a basic functionality and a provider for web usage data. How is that going to work or interact between each other? Maybe an idea in this diagram. So if you look on the right top of it, you have SCOM. SCOM knows how many virtual machines are online, what's their usage of VMM, CPU, RAM, etc., and puts it in its data warehouse. Then we have the VMM. VMM knows not even the Hyper-V host themselves. It knows the virtual machines that are running on these Hyper-V hosts or these Hyper-V clusters. Then we have the Service Provider Foundation. Service Provider Foundation is basically working as a collector of data. So it's collecting data, putting it together, and synchronizing it into the web usage data database. From there, we have another database functionality that sits on SQL Server based on analyst services, and that's the service reporting. One question, do you know how do you get service reporting? Where's the media for service reporting? Have you ever looked on the orchestrator CD when you put it in? There's one point on that that's called service reporting. So the technology sits on the orchestrator CD. Nearly the same than SMA does. SMA as the automation functionality, another automation functionality. So service reporting is part of the orchestrator ISO file, and it gives you this way to provide reporting. Let's going to talk about how to enable these reporting functionality. We have some steps, basically, or phases. First phase is to enable SCOM and VMM linkage. So at first, we need to make sure that we deploy SCOM agents to all Hyper-V hosts. If I look into the project where I'm currently working at the Wortmann data center, the interesting thing is there especially in the testing environment, that fully, in a different network segment there, they are. Hey, it looks like the guys there are standing up in the morning and thinking, okay, how many Hyper-V hosts do we have to set up this morning? They don't tell us. And if you try to make this work, you're gonna get an error message that you need to deploy SCORM agents at first. So basically, first important things, deploy SCORM agents on all Hyper-V hosts to make this work. If you've done that, second thing would be deploy SCORM and VMN console. You need one machine that's having both consoles on it to make this linkage available. If you've done that, you need to create permissions for service accounts to be available in SCORM and VMMs. Because we are linking them, we need to provide the permissions that they can interact. Finally, after you've done that, you can enable SCORM and VMM link using the VMM console. Something like go to VMM, then settings and system center settings, and there you have to input all the details, the run as accounts, etc., to make this work. But be careful if you run into an issue and the link doesn't work at all. It may be possible to use PowerShell to get rid of this link. The console in VMM may not give you a way to delete a link you're having. And in addition, if you're doing that, you should make sure you delete it with the PowerShell command. And if you're not on UR3, you should make sure that you don't enable Pro at the first step. You have to make sure that you create the link, so provide username, password, server names, etc. But don't enable Pro. If you do that, you're entering in a bug. And this bug will give you an error message that Pro isn't able to, you can't enable Pro. The workaround for that was do not enable Pro and the other functionality there. Just create the linkage, wait some hours, and later on enable that. With UR3, this bug seems to be fixed. So if you're on UR3, you can do it right now and it should work. After that, if you're fine with it, how can you check if this functionality is properly working? You just have to go to your operation manager site, drill down to the virtual machine manager, and check if you have an overview of all your Hyper-V hosts and the VMs that are sitting on the Hyper-V hosts. And if that's properly and it's working in the operation manager, then you're fine with this configuration. First step done. VMM and SCORM is working together. So after that, we need to think about the next step. Next step will be enable SCORM and SPF synchronization. Oh, I see that I've put in there enable. It has to be only one enable. Was a typo. So what we're going to have to do, we have to create a service account again. After that, after we have created the service account, we have to make sure that the service account is the account the application pool of SPF is working on. So you have to make sure that this works. This could be, the service account could be a domain user, or if you go with the block of Anders Ravenhold on the Building Clouds block, a local user account. Anders is always working with local user accounts. This does work too. So you need to make sure that you have a service account, local or domain user, and add this as the service account for the application pool of SPF. Next step, you need to make sure that this account is a member of the local group SPF usage and local admin. So on your SPF server, you need to add the service account to these groups. And if you're adding a user to a group, this means you have to re-log on again. Group nesting is working properly, and you are in the right permission to do everything afterwards. Afterwards, you have to enable, as the final steps, common SPF. How are we going to do that? With a PowerShell command. You don't have to write this down. You're going to get the PowerPoints later on, and you're going to find this information in the blog of Anders Gravenhold. And if you would like to have it in German, just go to my MVP colleague's website, Daniel Neumann, danielstechblog.de, I think. Okay, so there's a German description what you have to do if you want to make it work. So you have to be on an SPF server, import the SPF admin model, then set some variables with the name of the Operation Manager Data Warehouse SQL Server database. You have to make sure that you have the Operation Manager server name. Question on this is often when I talk to customers, and what about if I have more than one Operation Manager server? You have to put the RMS server name within there, and there's a, even in SCORM 2012, where we don't have a real root management server name, there's a role called root management functionality, and should put this server within there. But if you did some tests, and if you're doing, or if you're putting in another Operation Manager name within your environment, it works too. Basically, Microsoft tells you you have to put in the Operation Manager root management server, or basically the first server of your Operation Manager environment. Then the next step would be a complex statement, where we'd first get a SCSPF stamp, and then set a new SPS server name. And afterwards, we are putting in the data source, the initial catalog, data warehouse, security, etc. And for sure, you need to make sure that the account you're using for this has permissions on the Operation Manager Data Warehouse database. It needs to have read permissions on that. Otherwise, it won't work. The PowerShell command will work. But if you then afterwards look into the log files, you're going to see error messages. And if you look into the database where the information should come in, it will be empty. So set that PowerShell command, wait some minutes, check the database. I will going to tell you in my demo in some minutes what database you have to check. And afterwards, this should work. Otherwise, you should go for Friday for the session of Daniel, where he's telling you how to troubleshoot this reporting functionality. So just to repeat, afterwards, you have reached the fourth step of this step-through guide. You have enabled SCORM and SPF linkage. So now, after that, we have data in the environment of SCORM, data warehouse, and SPF as the collector. Next step, we should enable, or we have to enable, SPF and WAP linkage. So finally, all data of your virtual machines should be synchronized or added to your WAP usage data records. And that's the step now. You have to open SQL Management Studio and make sure that your service account has Ops Manager Reader account on the Data Warehouse Operation Manager database. After that, you should register the service provider usage collector in WAP, this UI. So now another step, at first we did some thing in the UI, linking SCOM and VMM. Then we did some things in PowerShell. Now we are back again on the UI part. You have to set the service usage, provider usage registration within web. Next step, now we have the data in the Azure Pack usage database. We need to make sure that we have an analyst functionality on this. So analyst services from SQL Server is now on its way, and we have to make sure that this would work. What do we have to do? We have to extract and transform the data from web database and save it to the usage analyst database in service reporting. We have to provide the SQL Service analyst data based on cubes. So what do you're getting at the data, the cubes has already calculated for you within SQL Server, and you're pulling that data from the analyst services to service to Excel pivot table. Yeah, it provides a source for Excel Power Pivot connects, as I already told you, and then you are nearly done. Basically, in general, you have to make sure that the SQL Server services run with a service account, set the service account to have access to the Operation Manager database again, set username and password for WAP usage REST API using PowerShell again, then modify some settings in an XML file that's part of the service reporting database setup. You have to put in the name of your SQL Server and instance where the data lives on. You have to put on in the name of the servers that are working in this environment. And later on, you have to fire off the post-deployment config PS1. Hopefully, the output would then look like this. Because if it's like this, you should hopefully have all data within your service reporting database. But maybe it will not work. Maybe it will work, maybe it will not work. That's the thing we have from our experiences. And one thing in addition to this, I just had last week a discussion with the Microsoft architect that's providing the architecture of the Azure Pack deployment at Vaultman Terra Cloud. And he told me, do not use service reporting. I was very surprised of that, because why shouldn't we do that right now? Right now, sorry for that, right now it is quite buggy. Service reporting data is not all in. So we are getting the data from the machines to the service to the service reporting service. But internally, there's some bugs that doesn't provide you the correct data on network usage and CPU. So what's the solution for this? Microsoft is telling us, oh, we're gonna have a third-party vendor. It's called CloudCruiser. So please use this as an alternative. This works. Right now, the service reporting doesn't work at 100%. CloudCruiser is a third-party vendor, resource provider that you are able to install with the web API. It sits on the web usage database. So that database that should have all data already in and provides you a functionality to do reporting on this own service, reporting, accounting, and billing. Basically, the Express Edition of CloudCruiser is for free, but only the Express Edition. For sure, CloudCruiser wants to make money, so they have an Enterprise Edition. And this Enterprise Edition gives you more flexibility and more functionality. But maybe if you're only an enterprise customer that's trying to or implementing WAP, it may fit into your environment because it provides you a way to report for 100 VMs. So if you are in a situation that you deploy more than 100 VMs in your environment, Express Edition wouldn't suffer your needs. So you need to go for the Enterprise Edition. Let's gonna talk a little bit where's the difference between those both versions. On the left side, we have the Cloud Cruiser Express Edition. It's limited to 100 of VMs, just to make sure that everybody's on the same level with it. The management infrastructure, so the web infrastructure itself, doesn't count within that 100 VMs. So that's important to know, because if I look to the TerraCloud data center where I'm doing the project right now, we have 78 machines responsible for management, so we're nearly done with the 100 machines if we had to count them within. Why do we have nearly 80 machines? That depends on the reason that we have split off all functionality to dedicated servers. So we have a server for tenant API, admin API, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this in a high available way within load balancer that sits in front of this. So that's why we are having this high number of VMs. So we have then that the Express version only works with Azure Pack. So you don't have a way to put in more data if you want to collect, for example, backup data, or at the Wortmann data center, we are talking about data that we are adding from housing and hosting. So we are not only doing infrastructure and software as a service, so that's totally missing. So we don't have any way to add more data from different data sources or SQL databases with the Cloud Cruiser Express. That's possible with the Cloud Cruiser Enterprise Edition. It's unlimited, and it is unlimited in its functionality to where you want to get your data from as soon as you know the SQL construct or the SQL technology and references between the tables, etc., because you have to make sure that Cloud Cruiser knows this. You have to know your structure of the SQL database to make this work. Then we are missing in the Express Edition service analysis, rate modeling. So I already told you that that Cloud Cruiser gives you a way to do billing. So perhaps you need some rebates, etc. That's missing. You're not able to do some forecasting based on your data you are having, and profit and loss management. If you look to the bottom from this, the next things, billing and chargeback for multi-tenants is possible with both editions, and out-of-the-box reporting is possible too. So if you are happy with 100 VMs, you can go with the Express Edition. Otherwise, you need to go or think about the Enterprise Edition of Cloud Cruiser to make these things work properly. And if you remember that, in my opinion, Microsoft told us to not use service reporting, which is a function that's there, but it's having so much bugs that you didn't get all data you should get. I don't know if that's a good idea to make these customers think about Cloud Cruiser, and Cloud Cruiser is not a software that costs only 100 of euros. It's a 1,000 to 10,000 euros licensing you have to do for that. So that would mean that you have to make sure that you have enough money for your deployment to get Cloud Cruiser right now. I hope that in the future, these bugs that are currently available and already as, yes, we know that these are confirmed bugs, will be solved, so that if we're going to talk in half an year or so, that with UR whatever, update rollup 5.4, 5.6, whatever, these issues have been solved. But right now, we have a service reporting functionality that may not get all data in your environment. Okay, that's being said. Short overview, how your reporting could look like if you use Cloud Cruiser. So you have here one service analyst report, or basically, in addition, a revenue by location report, so that you have more ways to provide graphical reports. And in addition, that's the slide. In addition, reseller revenues per month or whatever. So that's basic reporting, and these reports are part of the product, and you can modify those reports yourself if you want to make sure that it fits into your environment. So perhaps you will gonna see that Cloud Cruiser doesn't have the report you want to have. You can build it with Cloud Cruiser if you want to, if you have Enterprise Edition. Yeah, okay, so let's do some demo now right now. Hopefully my connection to the environment via the internet is still available and is not disconnected. We're gonna see. I hope that you can you have an idea what I'm presenting here, especially in the last rows of this room. Can you see it that way that you're able to view some of the details? I'm not in the last row right now, but hopefully my glasses is good enough to make sure. I have SQL Server Management Studio open over there, and I've already opened some of the instances of the functionality. We have an instance for a moment. I think I have to switch to a different thing to make sure that everything's fine. So everything's still there, yeah, and about a better quality, I hope. So here we have the databases that are in service reporting services. As you may see, we have parts of that on a SQL Server always on setup. I don't know if you have any experiences with SQL always on and WAP. Does somebody of these guys who are in that room and already have deployed WAP, do you have provide high availability? Or don't you do that? Do you do it with always on, or do you have a SQL cluster with it? You're fine. Because with always on, you may run into deep troubles. Right now, Microsoft is supporting WAP with SQL cluster. About a year ago, when the basic design for the TerraCloud data center at Wortmann has been done, they supported always on. So right now we are on always on. As you may see, when you look into the database, it's going in bracket synchronized. So we are on a always on functionality. And we have that the second instance is the operation manager data, where we have the database of operation manager. Then we have, move to that. Then we have the data warehouse, where we need to make sure that we have permissions on that, like I already described. Later on, I'm going to show you now the WAP databases. Here we go. So this is the instance for WAP. We have this management.managementsvz .config portal, etc. And we have here the management service usage database. And we have table within that. And here we have the usage records. And I'm going to show you the first 1,000 rows of that. So as you can see here, we have VM utilizations in the database because we already have done the linkage of this structure as I described. So that table should have data within if you are, have successfully configured WAP usage. Not service reporting, only WAP usage. If it's empty, you have a problem. And you have to check your log files or go to my colleague's session tomorrow how to troubleshoot this. So that's the basic data or the table where the reporting sits on. If we go with service reporting, I'm going to switch over to the instance where service reporting is running on. If it's properly configured, you will see these databases on that. We have the usage data warehouse database, usage ETL repository database, and usage staging database. That's the basic databases that will be created if you enable the synchronization between service reporting and WAP usage. If you're going with Cloud Cruiser as the reporting instance, you don't have to run this instance because Cloud Cruiser, as I already told you, sits on the WAP usage records and data. So this would then be not part of your environment. I'm going to tell you why we're having this, because this is live connection to our testing environment of the data center in at Wortmann. We're going to have this because right now we are planning to go with Cloud Cruiser, but our idea is that we're going to move to service reporting again if the bugs will be successfully solved and there's no bug anymore in service reporting, then we do the service reporting with reporting functionality of Microsoft and not of Cloud Cruiser. So we have, let's say it, a first step with Cloud Cruiser just to make sure we can bill and account our customers, and later on we are planning to move back to report servers. Yeah, so with that said, I'm going to show you how Cloud Cruiser could look like. Give me a second. Hopefully the connection I've prepared is on anyway. So that's how it may look like if you have Cloud Cruiser Enterprise Edition deployed in your environment. So we're going to have here all information on the left, where you can make sure that you have your executive insights, your demand insights, supply insights, forecasts, etc. And if you think about the difference between Express Edition and Full Edition, this part is not part of Express Edition. You're going to miss this there. So we have demand insight. Let's going to shut this report. So this looks like this. And you have a way to drill down in your report, and it will dynamically change the report to the data you want to have. So it provides you an easy way to do some reporting. It provides you a way to do billing. So the financial functionality, you can create your rate plans, you can create the customers, the discounts. So if you're having, as an hoster, different discounts, how many virtual machines the customer is running, you can make sure that you will put it in there to get your data out of the reporting for your billing. Yeah, and then we can configure the setup, the processing, and the workbooks for that. Finally, after that, you are able to get your data from within from this workbook, so you can create a new workbook with a group name. Let's say here Microsoft. Let's put in test 4711. Okay. So now you can add your data within from within there, or run this workbook for a dedicated timeline so that you are able to get your invoices from within Cloud Cruiser. For those of you who are working for customers that are rely on German language, as far as I know, right now Cloud Cruiser is only available within English. That's one thing we need to make sure that at the data center at our customer Wortmann, because they are working with government, healthcare, etc., and it's quite difficult to tell them to get English language reports or invoices or whatever. So that's where we have to do so. We had to do some work within the past to make sure that it's in Germany available or in German language. But this work is possible, and afterwards you need you can enable, and that's the interesting thing, I think, that you can enable more data collectors than WAP, especially for customers or for hosters that are not only doing infrastructure as a service, that are doing software as a service, but they are doing hosting and housing, and you need to make sure that you get those data within there automatically. So if you have a database that's SQL, if it's Microsoft SQL or Oracle or MySQL or whatever, you can add this data to Cloud Cruiser to make sure to get it all as soon as you know the data structure of the database that you are using. So you need to know where the data has been added to the database and create a connector to this database within Cloud Cruiser to make sure it works. Yeah, first impression of the Cloud Cruiser reporting functionality, if you don't already know it. That's going to switch back to my presentation. Oops, that was not the correct click. Need to make sure that you get the right slide. So, that was the demo. Some fields from the nodes, best practices. You should provide a dedicated server environment for usage reporting. If you think about usage reporting just from the Microsoft side, because it's analyst services, this may mean load on your SQL server when the kubes are being calculated, etc. So you should make sure that you have a dedicated server for this. And if you want to, you can provide high availability too on this. Then you should make think about high availability, as I already told you. Supported is for service reporting always on if you want to, or clustering. But you always have to think about, do we need high available usage reporting, or do we don't we need it? That depends upon what the idea, the design of your environment, because if you're an enterprise organization, it may not be needed to have high availability on that. Interesting. Configuring service reporting may be very hard, especially if you come and go for systems without update, rollup, whatever. So I lost, I think, a lot of hours with troubleshooting that, especially when you know there's no real setup guide for Microsoft how to deal with that. Within the past, there came in some blocks articles on the cloud, building cloud blocks, especially from Anders Revenold. And in my opinion, it looks to me like, especially in Europe, he's one of that guys from Microsoft that knows how reporting works, and the others don't know how that works, because as soon as I get into trouble with service reporting within the past, and I raised the case with Microsoft for that, I finally got contact of Anders Revenholz from Denmark, Microsoft Denmark, and he helped me within that situation. So the documentation for that, not only for this, but for the Bob in total, is not that deep if it should be, but you're going to get it work if you look to the correct blog articles.
The blog article is the only one how to that exists for service.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's no further details available on that. Yeah, key takeaways from that session. I think, in my opinion, accounting and billing is mandatory if you're using WAP. If you're using WAP and deploy virtual machines, you should think about how to deal with the costs for using this technology. Do you want to split it to your cost centers in your company or to your customers directly if you're a hoster? In addition, service reporting is currently quite buggy. Just make sure that it works the way you want to, and don't believe the data you're getting back if you haven't made sure that they are correct. So do some calculations your own to make sure that all data is correctly right now. And it's maybe not easy to configure, because you have to know that that PowerShell commands, etc., to make things work properly. You have to make sure that the SCOM and infrastructure is working, etc., etc., etc. If that all is in place and everything's working properly, you're fine. But if you have trouble with one of these functionalities, it doesn't work at all. Cloud Cruiser can fill this gap. If Enterprise Edition fits into your needs and 100 virtual machines are fine for you, it's free. You don't have to think about additional costs. If it's not, this means additional cost in your environment, but a full flexible way to do billing and accounting to make sure that everything's fine. If you think about the portal, how Cloud Cruiser looks like, I think you have an idea that from the past, this wasn't directly Microsoft technology they have been using. If you know Cloud Cruiser from the past, from the service manager part, etc., you may know that it was based on Apache, etc. And in some dialogues, it looks like it's running on Apache right now too, in my opinion. Any questions on this? If you don't have any questions right now, I will be outside. I will be there or here tomorrow and Friday, so just give me a hint and we can discuss these things. Anyway, I would like to thank you. I've put some additional links on this blog files, etc., the Building Clouds blog, for sure my Building Clouds community as a way to get more information on this. And for sure, I think one of the most interesting things, the Azure Pack Wiki right now with a link, with a third link. Yeah, so no questions right now, or are there any questions we need to discuss right now? Or are you done for today? Wait for your hotel, catch some air outside, and not sit in the Congress Center the whole day. Yeah. One moment. Yeah. As far as I know, the question, just to repeat the question, because I don't have any idea why the mics don't work, so I would give you a microphone. The question was, because of it's so buggy right now, is there any plan for Microsoft to solve these issues? Perhaps do it, go with Cloud Cruiser or whatever. Is that correct? Did I get it? Right now, their idea is to provide a functionality and a full working service reporting without Cloud Cruiser functionality. So their idea is to make service reporting work properly. Okay. So Cloud Cruiser will be an addition. It will be an alternative.
Will they make it easier to configure them?
I hope so. I hope so. We're going to see what the future will look like, what we're going to have with the next version of Azure Pack. But yeah, right now it's not easy to configure, and that's one thing where a lot of my customers are thinking about to move to another functionality, and perhaps like the Waldman guys that did buying the Cloud Cruiser license right now. Yeah. Further questions? Okay, I see you're all done for today, and so I would like to say thank you for your time to come to my session this evening. It's nearly 6:15 right now, so thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of the conference, enjoy the rest of the day, and if you're a speaker, we're going to meet at the speaker lunch today, dinner today, and otherwise we're going to meet tomorrow in the morning when I'm back here. And if you have some more questions, don't hesitate to contact me, or just have a look at the Building Clouds community blogs, because there's a way to send me an email. Just drop me an email, and I will would like to answer them if I can do, or otherwise give you an idea to whom you should discuss this question. So thank you, and have a good evening.